Welcome, everyone, to the Muslim Philanthropy Podcast at American Muslim Community Foundation. Today with us, we have Miri Whitehill. She is the founder and executive director of Miri's List. Over the last several months, I've been able to get to know Miri through a knowledge circle of a few different friends. So it's a pleasure and honor to have you on, Miri.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit more about your background and kind of where you grew up and went to school and how you got to where you are now?
Yeah, so I was born in Potomac, Maryland, and I come from a close-knit Orthodox Jewish community. I went to Orthodox private school my whole life, and until kindergarten through 12th grade. After I graduated high school, I went to college at University of Maryland and I studied marketing. And my first job out of college, I took a marketing gig at a technology company in Israel. And that's what led me to moving to Israel. I worked with that company for maybe 6 months. I found that I loved being in Israel. I loved living in Tel Aviv and the people there. And I started learning Hebrew. And unfortunately, it wasn't a good fit for me at the company that actually brought me there. But I resigned from that that job. And I just kind of started waiting tables at a restaurant and getting to know the people living around me in Tel Aviv. And that was a very transformative time in my life. I moved out there with just my dog, Leroy, and, growing up in this really kind of tight-knit community back in Maryland, I didn't really meet a lot of Arabic people. However, I grew up hearing a lot about them. And, I felt like at that time I was really kind of going through like a re-education process for myself firsthand, mm-hmm. which was totally not what brought me there. But, at this point, I'm 35 now, and I can look back at that time and I really see the beginning of Miri's List starting then, although it was 10 years before any of this happened. Eventually, I got a job at an ad agency in Tel Aviv, and that began my career in advertising. And I was in it for probably 7 more years before I ended up moving out to LA for a job in advertising, getting married, having a couple kids. I found myself really wondering what it would be like to be home to raise my children. It was really kind of a strange time for me because I never anticipated wanting to be a stay-at-home parent. But then I had a baby and I really wanted to be home with him. And when my oldest was about a year and a few months old, I decided to take a break from my career to be home with him. And it wasn't until his brother was born and about 5 months later. So that was in about 2016, July 2016. I was a stay-at-home mom with a 5-month-old and a 3-year-old. I was at the end of a marriage, but I didn't know it yet. I was really in a place of survival mode. It was a really hard time for me. Mm-hmm. And at the time, what I thought was going on was postpartum depression. I see now that's not what was going on. But a friend of mine called me really out of the blue, a neighbor of mine. She said that she had just met a family of 5 living in Azusa. They had moved to Los Angeles as refugees 3 weeks prior. And she thought to call me because they had a baby who was just about the same age as my youngest, Sabo. And she said the simplest thing. She was like, listen, they have this baby. He's 6 months old. He's been in their arms for 6 months. They have nowhere to put him down. They have a stroller, but it's like third or fourth hand and it's kind of broken. And they just want, do you have like a bouncer, like a baby chair that we can give to this family so they can put him there and like have hands free, be able to wash dishes and stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, at the time I was like, I had like my baby with me. My toddler was in the next room. I was just like, you know, if she had asked me for anything else, I probably would have been like, Suzanne, not now. That was her name, Suzanne. She's a good friend of mine. And, but it was such a simple, relatable thing that she needed. Cause you know, I was at the point in my life where I was barely making it through each day. And I had a safe place to put my baby down in every room of the house. And like, including the bathroom. So I could like shower and know that like everyone was going to stay alive for that short period of time. And I was just like, of course, yes. I really want to help that mom get a place to put her baby down. And, you know, I couldn't give her the bouncy chair that I had in my kitchen because I really needed it for just my survival. That's what led me to turning to Facebook. I posted in my local mom's group, does anybody have a jumperoo that they're done with that we could give to this little baby from Syria who lives in Azusa? And, you know, as you would expect, just within a couple minutes, somebody had responded saying, come on by. My son just stopped using his. They can have ours. So that is what led me to meeting this family in their home. I brought my neighbor's jumperoo and my friend Suzanne came with her. She brought some diapers and wipes that her church had donated. And I, you know, found myself meeting this family in their home. And I could just look around and see that that home was just not set up to be functional and certainly not comfortable for their family. And, you know, I specifically remember being in their bathroom. They had a one bedroom apartment and I like turned to dry my hands after washing them and there was no towel on the towel rack. And there was just something about that there wasn't towels there that just had me like suddenly like investigating my surroundings. And I like looked in their shower and I could see there was no soap. And I looked under their sink and there was no cleaning supplies. There was nothing. It was like I was in an empty motel room using the bathroom. And like, it's just like five people were using that bathroom for 3 weeks. And that just had me really concerned and I wanted to help to make sure that they had the things that they needed. And I knew it was obviously much more than just the jumperoo. And, you know, they only spoke Arabic. And I speak English and Hebrew. And so since then I've learned quite like a good bit of Arabic.
Uh-huh.
But at that time I spoke no Arabic. And so I called a friend, Luai. He was actually my neighbor in Tel Aviv. He's from Nazareth. He was our interpreter over FaceTime. And like, they had never met Luai before, but there was something about that they shared a language and they just talked to him like they had known him for years and years. And he convinced them to be real with me. And we walked around the house with him on the phone and we made a list, just a lot like this one, just of the things that the family needed. And it was big things like furniture and small things like cleaning supplies and garbage bags and diapers. And I went home and, you know, my initial reaction was, I'm just not going to go home. I'm just going to drive to Target. I'm going to buy everything on their list. I'm going to put it on my credit card. I'm going to deal with it later. And as I'm driving, luckily the drive between Azusa and Los Angeles is long enough that I was like, had the time to really think it through, because that would have been really irresponsible of me. Like I was barely making ends meet. We were on a single income.
Sure.
And instead of going to Target, I went home and I typed their list from my notepad into Facebook. And that was when my friends, my family, my friends' friends, people that I had worked with in advertising years prior, everyone just started stepping up and saying, oh, they need a crib, I got that. Oh, they need a mattress, I got that. I had one friend who, like, I hadn't seen in years. She went to Costco. She had downloaded a list on the internet of a traditional Syrian grocery list. And she like did a whole Costco run for this family that she had
Wow.
never met, called me out of the blue. And it just, that was, what I'm describing to you is the early days of Mary's List, the first Mary's List family. And it was a discovery of the need of this one family that I later learned was actually pretty representative of what happens for families when they come here through the resettlement, the refugee resettlement program, which we can talk more about. But then the other side of that was learning about the interest of the people that I knew who wanted to help these folks who really are the new Angelenos, the newest Americans. Like, we want to make sure that they have a welcoming homecoming, because that's really what this is. It's been about a little over 4 years since then, and we're a 501c3 nonprofit. We have a staff of 10. Most of the folks who work at Mary's List are people who have graduated from our program. And we've helped over 500 families
That's
get the things,
phenomenal.
people, and services that they need. So that's how it all began.
So in terms of like, seeing this need in the first family and just kind of getting connected to them, I think there was like, I hate the phrase, but it's like the perfect storm, right? It's like you were in a vulnerable place. You wanted to also feel like you wanted to help someone. I feel like just as much as maybe the family needed help, you also were looking to also kind of give back in a certain way as well. And just kind of seeing that transformation of like your family and friends wanting to help the other family. And I think it's great how like, full circle that moment is.
I had a lot to learn at that time, just about myself and about what families look like, what families sound like. I was at a really difficult point in my life where I had a really big decision to make. And the kind of decision that you can't go back from, the kind of decision to get a divorce and start over as single parents. And, I didn't see it at the time, but I look back now and I'm realizing, being around the courage, like, these are folks who have already made choices that they cannot go back from. There is so much bravery that is required to go through migration and resettlement as a refugee. And it's like just being around that, I just became more courageous myself. And suddenly it was like I could do anything I needed to do to look after my kids and make sure that we have the best possible future, because that's the culture that was around me. And that's a beautiful thing.
So take me through like, that first experience and now you've done helping over 500 families. What is that growth at a nonprofit, like experiencing that and kind of like what have your takeaways been as a nonprofit executive?
I think Mary's List has grown a whole lot very quickly. I think that that began from the meeting with the very first family, because really identifying the need and having a really clear idea of what that need is, and then the other side, knowing that there's an interest from a community that wants to help, that having that as the foundation of everything we did, it meant that no matter what, no matter how many dollars we raised, there was always going to be a demand and support for what we did. And I think that that has been really critical to Mary's List in the last 4 years since we got started. And then the other thing I'll say is I did not go to school for nonprofit management. I also did not set out to start a nonprofit organization. It was something actually, you know, I had opened a TurboTax 501c3 form and paid for it. And then like 3 months went by, 6 months went by, and I kept trying to complete it. And, you know, I just kind of was at this point where either I was going to spend my time and energy helping families, or I was going to figure out how to do the 501c3 application. And I just decided that however many families that I could help would be enough. And I was just going to focus my energy on that. And as soon as I kind of surrendered to that, a couple lawyers emailed me literally the very next day saying, we went to law school together. We've been looking for a way to stay involved. We're home with our kids. We're taking a break from our careers.
Wow.
And we want to help. We met the next day with laptops and our kids at an indoor playground. That's Yin and Jade. Yin is the chief operating officer at Mary Bliss. Jade is our board chair. And the two of them just said, we want to help, and this is how we can help. And suddenly they took care of it. And, you know, there's a story like that, of how every key person who's part of the Mary's List story, they have a story similar to that. And so I guess my point is, what's the key takeaway? Let people present themselves. Say yes.
I love that.
Yeah. I can't do it myself. I would not have been able to do it without the support of hundreds and hundreds of people giving expertise, time, advice, present company included, by the way. And just thank you so much for having me here and just sharing the space with me.
For sure. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I see the value in what you do and whatever way that I can do to help that and let more people know about Mary's List. I'm more than happy to do that. I know that similarly for me at American Muslim Community Foundation, and even throughout my career, whether I was at ISPU or Tetleaf Collective or the Red Cross, it was always those people who were willing to extend a hand that you just, you know, you find that opportunity and you connect with people, and those are the relationships that really are meaningful, you know, because, you know, you'll always have your family and friends, but those volunteers or those people that chip in and go the extra mile that are in it, in the mission with you, like, those are people that you can continue to count on years down the line. And it's that relationship building that's critical there.
So true. So true.
For like, in terms of like how has COVID affected the organization?
COVID has impacted Mary's List in a number of ways. First of all, the way that's impacted the community that we serve a population of people who have urgent needs. All vulnerable communities were impacted by COVID. The families that we're serving, you know, they don't necessarily have access to things like masks and cleaning supplies, which are expensive, and, you know, just the basic supplies to safely quarantine at home and comfortably do that at home. And then the other thing that I'll mention is access to devices for home learning. That is a huge challenge for the resettling population that we serve. Many of our families are lucky to live in school districts where students are able to check out devices. However, even those devices need to be returned at the end of the semester. And so, like, that creates huge gaps in the year when, you know, that learning device is the connection. And then, you know, college students, who many of whom are parents, young parents who are enrolled in college for the first time, they're not going to have access to devices necessarily that they can check out from their school. So just the way that we're responding to the urgency of those needs, you know, access to a laptop in 2020 and 2021, that is access to your classroom. That becomes a social justice issue. And, we've had to pivot really quickly to make sure that we are raising funds to make sure that the families that we serve have those critical supplies. In 2019, we considered a laptop to be something that families would get after their initial needs were met. Now it's prioritized right next to bed because it is so critical for connecting to a classroom. For Mary's List, when COVID hit in March 2020, the first thing we saw is that individual donations just stopped for like a month. And the only donations we got in the month of March were recurring monthly donors, our subscribing donors, because those are happening automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So the first takeaway, I was like, wow, we really need to invest in the communication of how important it is to support Mary's List on a monthly basis. So that was like the first thing. The next thing we noticed is that we started getting responses to all of the foundation, the grant applications that we had. We applied for about $1.2 million in funding in 2020 and the end of 2019. Nearly all of that was canceled or postponed. And so we found Wow. ourselves with almost, this huge question mark. Will people and foundations still care about refugees in the face of COVID-19? So March and April were very stressful, but we ran a emergency fundraiser in April to support mm-hmm. 12 families in getting those things that I mentioned earlier, the critical supplies and the laptops. And people were so responsive. We hit our goal. We quickly had the answer to that question. Also, most of the foundations that canceled the programs that had kind of were supposed to start shortly after COVID hit, most of them came back and they had new applications for COVID-specific funding, and we applied for yeah. all of them. And we actually have a higher percentage of success with those applications, the COVID emergency relief grants, than we have had with general operating. So 2020 was a really big year for Mary's List, and we grew. We were actually able to grow in the face of a global pandemic. And what that meant was that we were able to help 222 families during the year. Most of those people are children and babies and young parents. And it also means that we were able to increase our capacity. So last year, we were helping on average 12 families per month. Starting this month, we are enrolling 25 families per month. So we've more than Wow. doubled our capacity to help.
Yeah.
I still don't know, is our capacity at the same level as the demand? We are not sure yet. We kind of have to see how this plays out. The Muslim majority country travel ban was lifted within the first 24 hours of the Biden administration. We are hopeful. Many of our program recipients have said that they're receiving calls from relatives saying that their applications are reopened. Some of them have even gotten arrival dates.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are. And, our team is doing everything remotely.
Yeah. In terms of, being able to focus on these services and what additional, wraparound services need to be provided to these families, and what are the key areas that Mary's List has said, okay, we'll focus on these issues, but we'll outsource or connect these families to these other institutions, and what are those partnerships look like?
So we focus on the first year following arrival. And so our 12-month program is broken into three phases: survive, hive, and thrive. And we are hoping that each family that's enrolled in our program will kind of go through those stages. And the offering, the program offering that each family is getting is it will change throughout the course of where they're at. So in the beginning, we're offering in kind of the survive phase, it's getting that family set up in their home with the things that they need to be safe and comfortable. So providing things like beds, cleaning supplies, just school supplies, getting each family set up with a wish list that can almost like a wedding registry or a baby registry. We will share each family's wish list with our community of donors. People are able to send housewarming gifts directly to the door of these families. There's a value in this that kind of goes beyond what's inside each box, where also the donor is able to write a message and it's going in the box and the family is able to read that, which is part of the kind of reestablishment of a community support system. For many of the families in our program, they came from communities and even households where they lived multiple generations in one household, really tight communities, living close to their friends, their cousins, their aunts, their uncles. And they have sacrificed so much to be here. And the feeling of isolation is just almost part of it, to the point where they have to get used to feeling isolated. And we, as the community surrounding them, have this unique opportunity where we can intervene in ways that are safe and comfortable for the family, address their most urgent needs. And it can counteract some of the almost traumatic effects of feeling separated from your community support system. It's helping to drive a sense of belonging. In that second phase, hive, if you can just kind of like imagine like a beehive, we're like surrounding the family with the things and people and services that they need to further integrate within the community. And so what we are providing at that point is, it's called SANA, S-A-N-A-H. That stands for Serving American Newcomers at Home. And it is a 3-month virtual ESL program where a family is matched with a volunteer ESL trainer. And they're meeting every week for 3 months. We're also providing a laptop as part of that program. And every week, both volunteers and the family are filling out surveys about their experience. And that is giving the family a point person, somebody that they know. It's probably not somebody that they're going to meet face-to-face anytime soon, at least because of COVID-19. But we've been able to kind of overcome that disconnect because we can't gather now in person. And that's provided a lot of value for families, especially single parents who are, you know, there's a higher number of single parents in our program than in the general population, just because of the nature of how the reason why folks become refugees and have to come here through the resettlement program. And, you know, those parents, they don't have a lot of access to adult conversations. And if they don't have a lot of friends and neighbors that they're connecting with on a regular basis, it can become really lonesome. And in that third tier, Thrive, you know, that's where we want all of our families to end up. It is having a sense of belonging having a sense of a supported community. Many of our families, when they reach that point, they ask us about how they can volunteer with Mary's List to help the families who have come after them. That is really helpful because in language, volunteers are, you know, it's the most helpful thing in the very beginning, is to be able to just talk openly without the need for an interpreter. And particularly the families that speak Dari, we don't have a whole lot of volunteers that speak Dari. So if there's anyone watching this and they speak Dari or Pashto, just reach out. We would love your help. And, you know, we are focused on what we as neighbors can do to show up for these families in their first 12 months after arrival. And that means that there's a whole lot of things that we're not going to do. And so we're not here to replace a resettlement agency who, you know, that caseworker at the resettlement agency is going to help that family with really important things in the first 90 days after they arrive here. But even though we're not, you know, working directly with those resettlement agencies, the support that we provide the family takes pressure off of that caseworker who may be responsible for hundreds of other people.
Right.
And that's something that we, that's just kind of a side effect of having a community sponsored model in addition to having a federal based program to support refugees.
So something a lot of people are probably wondering, is Miri's List available across the country in a specific region?
Great question. Because the support that we provide is virtual and our wish lists are online, we provide support to families across the country. We're serving families right now in 17 states nationally. Sacramento, California, New Haven, Connecticut. There's a couple of cities in Texas, a couple of cities in Ohio, Washington State. These are places where we have growing communities. And oftentimes we'll enroll one or two families in a city, and then suddenly we'll hear from four, five, six more within the next couple of weeks, because the vast majority of people who are enrolled in Miri's List have heard about us. It's a word of mouth referral system. And then families can apply online on our website.
Fantastic. And for those that are listening, Miri is spelled M-I-R-Y. So Miri's List is their Instagram handle, and mirislist.org is the website. And she's got a Resist, Persist, Miri's List shirt on, rocking it. Are those available on the website as well if people wanted to buy a shirt?
Yes, this t-shirt is available in lots of colors, and we also have sizes for kids. It's a totally unisex line of clothing, and you can get it on our website if you click merch.
Awesome. I see that next to the donate button. Well placed. Yeah. So, you know, this whole journey and kind of where you've been today, you know, in one of our knowledge circle sharings, you mentioned that you are also writing a book. So I wanted to give you some time to talk a little bit about that as well.
Thank you for the reminder. And actually, I wrote a book. I'm actually done writing it, which is the best part of writing a book, when it's officially in process, but it's somebody else's problem. And it is called Our World as a Family. It is a picture book. It's for kids ages 4 and up. And it's a picture book about why people move around the world as refugees and how we can help people who are new in our school or neighborhood. The book is, I wrote it with a friend of mine, Jennifer Jackson, my co-author, and it is based on the way that I learned how to explain to my kids who all the new friends that they were making were. And, you know, I had a little baby and a 3-year-old when Miri's List began. So, you know, my oldest son, Ruben, he was the first volunteer. He was helping to sort toy donations and baby clothes from when he was, you know, before he could really even talk. And
love it.
You know, he can tell you the languages that they speak in Afghanistan, and he has friends from all over the world. And it's important that we're addressing this and talking about it, because it should be age appropriate, of course, and it should be honest always. But kids are often, for resettling students, they're seeing them in classrooms. And so they are kind of this first line of welcoming that can happen. And so that was where our World as a Family came about, and it's going to come out in 2022.
Very exciting. And then when you guys had your event last year, you were kind enough to share some tickets, and the discount code was Anahuna. So can you tell us a little bit more about Anahuna as well?
Yes. So Anahuna Huna is our slogan at Mary's List. It is it's an Arabic phrase. Ana, I, and Huna is here. I'm here is something that we say a whole lot just in the business of working at Mary's List. We can tell the families that that we're meeting, we tell them, Ana Huna, I'm here for you. Also, when we're showing up to drop off supplies at their house, we text them, Ana Huna, I'm here. And so it's something that it's also what we hope that our families, as they go through our programming and become close and engaged with the people surrounding them that really want them to live big, beautiful lives here and really want to welcome them, we hope that those families will have that sense of presence here and can say for themselves, Ana Huna, and really claim their place in the United States. That is what this country is made of. We are here and we're here to help. Ana Huna.
Awesome. That's really beautiful. In terms of like partners, one that comes to mind, there's a company, it's a nonprofit, but it's called Tarjimly, Tarjim.ly is their website. And they give jobs to refugees who can help with translating services a lot. So I don't know if you've been able to utilize them, especially virtually, would be able to help with a lot of the conversations, I think.
I am a big fan of the folks at Tarjimly and the amazing technology that they built. We actually did a training with them like a week ago. So
really cool.
It's something that has really unlocked a lot for many organizations doing work with this population all over the world. And we're excited to be using it more in our interactions with families as well.
Really cool. Yeah, anything else you'd like to share?
Well, when does this air?
I'm hoping it'll be on YouTube later today. But in terms of the podcast, we'll take a few weeks, possibly almost 2 months. So when people are hearing it on the podcast, yes, we recorded this in February. The one thing I wanted to ask as a follow-up was just, what are some of your favorite nonprofit organizations that you personally give to?
Wow, there are so many nonprofit organizations that I have just learned about in the last couple of years in doing this work. My favorites are a local organization here called Jazz Hands for Autism. It is a music program, a community-based organization for folks who are on the autism spectrum. My two others are both organizations that work with the resettling community, just because this is my work, this is my life, and I just have so much love for the people at the Program for Torture Victims in Los Angeles. It's an incredible organization providing therapy and community support and love for folks who have arrived to seek asylum here and as refugees, people who have really been through the worst living nightmares, and that's an amazing. So that's PTV LA, Program for Torture Victims. And then the last one I wanted to mention was Immigrant Families Together, which is an organization that was founded just a few years ago, similar to Mary's List, and they focus on helping to reunite families that have been separated by the Trump administration. And so the work that they're doing is transformative in every single way. I'm so lucky. I get to meet people who do incredible things focusing on missions related to Mary's List and then outside. And so those are three organizations that I really love.
Awesome. And I feel like one of the best parts of doing this podcast is just meeting people like yourself who are in it and just doing fantastic work every day. You know, just listening to your story again is just so inspiring. I want to thank you for the work that you do, Mary.
Thank you so much. And I do want to mention one other thing for anybody who's listening. And if you're watching on YouTube, and it's still February, we have One of our programs is called New Arrival Supper Club, and it's a program for resettling chefs. And we provide picnic to go's that are made by folks who have graduated from our program. And on Valentine's Day, we are having our next supper club, and you can get a picnic for two. That's available through our website. And then if you're hearing this later on, we do these events in Los Angeles every single month. So follow New Arrival Supper Club on Instagram or Facebook to learn about what upcoming events, because no matter what language you speak, we can all enjoy a delicious meal together. And that is truly the universal connector. And I wish that we would be able to sit down and have a meal together as soon as possible. That's when we'll do it.
Definitely. And looking forward to that. I love to eat and have been thinking about food and what I'm going to eat. So yeah, that's probably like 90% of my day is just what am I going to eat? And 10% is actually eating it. But
yeah. Language.
Yeah. Well, again, everybody can find out about Miry's List at MIRYSList.org. And that's also their Instagram handle, Miry's List. Miry, again, thank you so much. Really looking forward to continuing our friendship and being in this work together.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yep.